Hello, this is Karen Fresco with the News Gazette, dated Wednesday, January 15, 2020. We begin today's reading on the front page with the article headlined, Rantoul Sports Complex, a Driving Economic Force. Attendees at groundbreaking learn state allocating $500,000 for facility. By Dave Hinton, Rantoul. The state of Illinois has earmarked $500,000 in capital appropriations for the new $20 million artificial turf sports complex that will be built in West Rantoul. It marks a start for a project that State Senator Scott Bennett, Democrat Champaign, promises will benefit not only central Illinois, but also the state as a whole. Bennett was one of the speakers at a Tuesday event to formally recognize the construction project. Flanked by heavy equipment ready to begin groundwork when conditions permit, a group of close to 30 people of all ages gathered around golden shovels for Tuesday's ceremony. They were among about 140 people who attended. The sports complex, which is slated to open next year, is projected to provide an economic booster shot. Said Rantoul Mayor Chuck Smith, "It will be a driving economic force in our community. It will create and allow retail and service development, a total of 82 acres in commercial property, and 150 acres of residential property. The overall possibilities are unlimited." Bennett said he remembers his first conversation with Smith, who drove him around and told him of his memories and vision for the village. Bennett said he remembers the Rantoul of yesteryear, when he'd catch a weekend movie at the Wings Theater and thinner days working out at Forum Fitness Center. The town for years was also home to Chanute Air Force Base. While the Forum is still going strong, the Wings and Chanute are long gone. It's time for the town to move ahead, said Bennett and several other speakers. The ceremony marked the second held in West Rantoul this month. On January 3, a ribbon-cutting grand opening was held at the new Shields Auto Center north of the site. Marin, a new era. State Representative Mike Marin, Republican of Fithian, said he hopes Tuesday's groundbreaking is the first of many in Rantoul. This really is a key moment that ushers in a new era in the story of Rantoul, a story I've been following for a long time, Marin said. It's really an event that marks the turning point where we have a lot of really, really good things that are starting to happen in this community. Recreation Department Director Luke Humphrey said the ceremony took place almost to the day on the anniversary of when he started putting pencil to paper on an idea that had been sitting on the shelf for many years. The sports complex, which is projected to draw traveling teams from a 400-mile radius, will also be geared toward local residents. Village officials have said it will be open to rec department and other community-related activities, including baseball, softball, soccer, football, and other sports. Rantoul Township High School Athletic Director Travis Flessner said the village has made it clear that it wants to involve local youth. "The village really wants to work with us and help get our sports out there," Flessner said, noting there have been talks regarding baseball, softball, and soccer possibly playing at the complex. "We would love to play some of our games out there, and playing on artificial turf would be awesome. Them reaching out to us and other local schools and teams shows us they want us and the community to be able to benefit from this and not just travel teams from outside the area. Better option for sports." Renick Riddle, a student at Rantoul's J.W. Eder Junior High, was one of four Eder students who took part in the groundbreaking. He said planned construction excites him because it's going to give us a better option for sports. Bennett said it will draw people from a wide area, people who want to spend the weekend with a family. They don't want to go to Chicago and Indianapolis. They want to spend their money right here where they make it, Bennett said. The complex will be paid for from private contributions, sponsorships, donations, and grants, with the bulk of funding coming from bonds paid for from income generated by the village's tax increment financing fund. Sponsorships for sale. Village Administrator Scott Eisenhower said there is a great possibility of seeing additional state dollars as well as federal grant and foundation dollars. Eisenhower said the village has been in talks with companies interested in sponsorships. He said those talks will now ramp up with the groundbreaking ceremony and Bennett's announcement of the $500,000 state contribution. Available sponsorships would come in the form of naming rights for fields. Paying for half the cost of a field would total $1.5 to $2 million. The park, scoreboards, concession stands, and signage. People who we hadn't initially thought of for a sponsorship have been very interested in being part of it, Eisenhower said. We have been surprised, just as I think we'll be surprised by the number of different ways the park is used. University of Illinois, Killeen in line to earn hefty pay bump. Trustees set to vote Thursday on raising salary to $835,000. By Tim Dittman, Chicago. President Tim Killeen is in line for a raise under a contract extension to be considered by U of I trustees. On Thursday in Chicago, they'll vote on a four-year extension, the longest allowed by state law, the U of I announced Tuesday. Killeen would make $835,000 annually, with base pay and incentives rolled into one sum. Killeen, who in May will mark 5 years on the job, currently receives a $600,000 base salary and is eligible for separate $100,000 yearly bonuses, which trustees have awarded him in each of the past 4 years. There's also an annual retention bonus of $100,000 in the proposed new deal. That would be paid as a $400,000 sum if Killeen stays through the end of the contract. His original 5-year deal also included a retention bonus, but it was removed at his request. The raise would make Killeen's base pay the fifth highest among 11 Big Ten presidents with multi-campus oversight, the U of I said. Fortunately, along the way, there were mentors who appeared in my life and helped to build me. My mother obviously was there. Also, certain individuals who would step in through periods of my life. I would sort of latch onto them to find my way to where I wanted to go. I recognized positivity in them. You've said you had to strike a balance between being smart and socially acceptable on the streets. It was a survival skill. It was one of those things where you had to blend into the community. It was a fun place. It was very colorful and dynamic, but it was also one of hardship. I had to be a chameleon of some sort, blend in with the community I was in while doing well in school. Academics was not something embraced in my peer group. You would get teased and called names if you did well academically. If you got an A on a math test, they might call you a nerd or corny or square. I tell kids if they call you a nerd today in school for doing well, that's okay because they'll be calling you boss tomorrow. What is your advice to other young people struggling with similar circumstances? Just to stay the course and trust the process. It's a little easier today because of the social internet and exposure to hundreds of millions of people. When I was growing up, you didn't have that. You just had your community you grew up in. Now you can reach out to other communities on the internet. There are more ways to express yourself, to really find that group you can belong to. Kids today going through any challenge, whether it's atmosphere or financial or home-based challenges, should tell themselves this is only temporary. The greatest years to live are still in front of them. If they do the work now and put their heels to the ground and stay the course, it's going to pay off. They have to put the work in, they have to believe, and they can't surrender to their circumstances. Tell us about the pact you made with your two friends in high school, Dr. Ramek Hunt and Dr. George Jenkins, to become doctors. Those two guys are my best friends. We met in high school, ninth grade, same classes pretty much throughout the 4 years of high school. We had similar stories. We were all smart. We were just having fun as teenagers. We didn't know what we were going to do with our future because no one in our immediate family had ever gone to college, coming from single-parent homes. In our senior year, a recruiter from a local college, Seton Hall University, came and did a presentation on careers in health and science. We were cutting class in that particular moment, and a security guard chased us into the class where this presentation was happening. The security guard let us be. The presentation went on about becoming doctors, dentists, bench research scientists. When the seminar was over, everybody was excited. We applied to Seton Hall. We were accepted as pre-med majors. We all went to medical school and dental school together. Along the way, we just supported each other. How did you choose medicine, particularly emergency medicine? I would say it found me. I always enjoyed helping people. When it came to choosing emergency medicine, I always call it organized chaos, it resembled my life. I think for me, it's the immediate gratification that you receive from helping someone else, from being a part of saving a life in the most immediate way. I don't have to sit around and wait for days for a result. I immediately can bring a person back from death. That part excites me. It reflects my life in a lot of ways, just having these moments. I wasn't expecting to become a doctor. I was cutting class of all things, and here I am now. It's just life chances and life moments. Whose idea was it to set up the Three Doctors Foundation? We graduated medical school, and there was a story about it in the local paper, the Star Ledger. It was on the front page, and the title was The Start of Something Big, and it had photos of the three of us from our high school graduation days. From there, it snowballed. We just started having opportunities to do more media, more speaking events. We just felt a burning need to give back. Through some local talks we started to do, we raised some dollars. We were going to give the money away for a scholarship. Then we decided that would be a one-time thing. Why not do something more permanent? We decided to start a foundation. We founded the Three Doctors Foundation as first-year residents. We had to be the only philanthropists we knew who had student loans. We are now celebrating our 20th year. You're obviously a role model to others. Who is your role model or hero? It's cliche, But I think my mother is my hero in many ways, just because I've seen how hard she's worked to raise six kids in a two-bedroom home, a single parent with no education. She had the foresight to say, "You're going to school. You're going to school. You are going to school." I admire West Moore, CEO of the Robin Hood Anti-Poverty Group. I think he's doing a lot of great things for the community. I look at somebody on the highest level like Barack Obama. Whether you like him or not, you know his intentions are genuine. He cares about the community, about galvanizing rather than separating. What do you think Dr. King would focus on today if he were still alive? The world has changed so much. I think he still would be on the same sort of path of just being the best person you can be. I think he would still be fighting social injustice and making sure we are all accountable for what we believe in and fighting for what we believe in. I would be remiss if I didn't include him as one of my heroes. Martin Luther King shows a lot of humanity and self-respect and dignity that we can all learn from. To hear him say, "The ultimate measure of a man is not where he stands in moments of comfort and convenience, but where he stands at times of challenge and controversy," or, "Life's most persistent and urgent question is, what are you doing for others?" Those types of quotes and the ability to always put people first in his journey is something I try to emulate. Let me do what I can do to leave this place better tomorrow than it is today. That's the philosophy I live on every single day. From the local section, Champaign City Council, sponsorship guidelines still elusive. Staff recommendation was not to do it at all. By Ben Zichterman, Champaign. The Champaign City Council is still trying to settle on guidelines for helping it determine which events to sponsor. At Tuesday's meeting, city staff recommended not sponsoring any events, as there isn't a recurring source of revenue. But multiple members said the council likely wouldn't follow that, and that it could discourage worthy events from coming to Champaign. What if SXSW said we wanted to do an SXSWCU, and then we point to this and say, "Yeah, we're not doing it because we don't fund anything like that," Mayor Deb Finan said. I think the idea that we never would is a lie. But at-large council member Tom Bruno argued that the current lack of guidelines makes for bad policy. Without a regulated policy, we may be tempted to just sponsor the person who comes to us first and says, "This is the great thing I'm doing for the community. Would you sponsor it?" said Bruno, who added that organizers who ask first or have better connections might unfairly be prioritized. "It's awfully easy to make charitable donations with other people's money," he said. "But when we tax people and force them to pay taxes to the city, then giving it away for charitable purposes is a slippery slope." When the council last discussed event sponsorship in April, it wasn't ready to give authority to a commission to grant sponsorship or funding, so instead directed staff to create guidelines. Staff came back Tuesday with the recommendation that the city shouldn't sponsor or fund events, with narrow exceptions for existing agreements with 40 North's Friday Night Live program and the Christie Clinic Illinois Marathon. Finan asked if the IHSA boys basketball tournament could also be exempted, as the city just pledged $50,000 a year to bring the area's effort to bring back the tournament it once hosted. If they wanted to have the 27th mile kind of thing like they do for the marathon, and they wanted to do something on the city's streets, if there were something that were to involve permitting, would this preclude us from having made a pledge to IHSA? Finan asked. Deputy City Manager Matthew Rochley said he didn't think it would. We could craft an exception that would make clear that we have an existing arrangement, he said. At the end of Tuesday's meeting, they again directed staff to prepare for another study session on guidelines for event sponsorship. Are there some standards? Should the application tell us what the economic benefit to the community is, or the community benefit if it's not economic? What are those things? Even if it's just some bullet points, Finan said. City staff also recommended several technical changes to the special events ordinance, such as raising the minimum limit of liability insurance required from $300,000 to $1 million per occurrence to bring it in line with industry standards, adding a $20 per day late fee for special permit applications not submitted more than 30 days before the event, allowing the city to deny special permit applications if the organizers owe the city money. Council members didn't appear to have any objections to these changes, and they will be brought back at future meetings for a vote. Candidate forums, two chances to get answers. If you've ever walked into the voting booth and blanked on a name or two on the ballot, here are two opportunities to learn more about the candidates running this year and where they stand on things you care about. The League of Women Voters of Champaign County, NAACP Champaign County, and the News Gazette will host two candidate forums in advance of the March 17 primaries. And for the first time ever, there will be an opportunity for the public to submit questions for the candidates in advance of the forums. League of Women Voters President Barb Wysocki said those attending the forums will still also be able to submit questions in writing after they arrive. But offering a chance to submit questions online in advance is intended to draw questions from a broader spectrum of the community, realizing that a lot of people can't get to these forums, she said. Candidates in Champaign County primary races, all Democrats, have been divided into two forums set for January 30 and February 10, both to be held at the Champaign City Building, 102 North Neal Street, Champaign. This is a high-interest election year, and League of Women Voters member Jonna Von Behrens said the group wants to help educate voters to make informed choices. We have seen a great response from the candidates and their willingness to participate in the forums, she said. All but one candidate has responded to the invitation to participate, Behrens said. Here's the lineup for the January 30 forum. 7 to 7:30 p.m., Circuit Clerk Robert Burkhalter and Susan McGrath. 7:35 to 8:20 p.m., Sixth Circuit Judge Troy Lozar, David Moore, Ramona Sullivan, and Ruth Wyman. 8:25 to 8:55 p.m., County Board District 8, Emily Rodriguez and Geraldo Rosales. For the February 10 forum, 7 to 7:45 p.m., U.S. House of Representatives, Illinois 13th District, Betsy Dirksen-Londrigan and Stephanie Smith. 7:50 to 8:20 p.m., County Board District 6, Deshaun Williams and Charles Young. 8:25 to 8:55 p.m., County Board District 10, Mary King and Connie Dillard Myers. 9 to 9:30 p.m., County Board District 9, Cynthia Fears and Jennifer Straub. Behrens said the candidates will each have an opportunity to make a statement for up to 2 minutes to address their qualifications, reasons for running, and priorities they want to address if they're elected. Then they'll address questions on the issues. Each candidate will also have an opportunity to make a closing statement for up to 2 minutes. Questions on the issues can be submitted ahead of the forum by clicking on the Ask the Candidate box on the League of Women Voters website at lwvchampaigncounty.org. That article by Deborah Pressey. Crime Update by Mary Schenck. Urbana man accused of having sex with teen in back of his cab. Urbana. An Urbana man is due back in court next month after being charged with allegedly having sex with a teen in the back of his cab. Aaron J. King, 32, who listed an address in the 1200 block of West Hill Street, was arraigned Monday on a single count of aggravated criminal sexual abuse. Assistant State's Attorney Kristen Alferink said the alleged victim was a teenage girl who was staying at the Pavilion, a behavioral treatment facility in Champaign, which has a contract with a local cab company to transport its clients. She told police that on September 27, she called a cab to take her back to the Pavilion after work. The police report said she told the driver her age and that he asked her questions about whether she had a boyfriend and ultimately if she wanted to have sex with him. The teen told police she had sex with the man in the back seat of his cab in a parking lot. She reported the incident to Pavilion staff a few days later. Given her age, she was legally unable to consent. The police investigated and narrowed the driver by time of call and his description to King. When the police spoke to him, he initially denied he worked for the cab company, then later admitted he had worked there and had driven kids that stayed at the facility. He also admitted having sex with one older female in his cab, but not one matching the description of the teen. Later, he said there may have been others, but due to substance abuse, he might not recall accurately. A warrant was issued for King's arrest for the Class 2 felony last week, and he was arrested Monday. He appeared before Judge Adam Dill, who left his bond at $50,000 and told him to have no contact with the alleged victim. King is due back in court February 11. If convicted, he faces penalties ranging from probation to 3 to 7 years in prison. Crime Report by the News Gazette. Area police report the following activity. Champaign. 2400 block of North Neal Street. Teenage boy robbed of a BB gun, knife, driver's license, cell phone, and cash by three other males at 3 p.m. Saturday. State Farm Center, 1800 South 1st Street. Two counterfeit $20 bills used to pay for concessions at basketball games on December 14 and 29. Walmart, 2610 North Prospect Avenue. Purse with identification, credit cards, cash, stolen from shopping cart, January 1. 1200 block of North Walnut Street. Purse stolen from vehicle, Wednesday night. 1300 block of Sunset Drive. House entered Thursday after 3 p.m. Two televisions, two computers, two electronic gaming systems, clothing among items stolen. We'll take a short break now and return with the second half hour of the News Gazette, dated Wednesday, January 15, 2020. Please stay tuned.